Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Morning. It is March 27th, Tuesday. Awfully glad you joined me this morning as we're getting our bodies moving and our brains engaged. Let us feed our minds truth and faith and love. Here's a word from Pastor Tim Keller. He said, out of the cross comes the resurrection. Out of weakness comes real strength. Out of repentance and admitting you are weak comes real power. Out of giving away and serving others comes real strength. Out of generosity and giving your money away comes real wealth. That's the gospel storyline. So here's a couple of things to feed your mind with this morning. Psalm 25, verse 5. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. For you I wait all the day long. John 14, 6. Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And Psalm 145, verse 18, the Lord is near to all who call on him, to all who call on him in truth. So you're calling on him this morning, whatever your day has planned. For some people, it's a regular routine day. For others, the stakes are high, and maybe there's something scary ahead. Maybe you're just home alone this morning, and you're feeling a little isolated and alone, and know that God loves you. And he has his arms around you and cares about you. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, Rob Bluey is going to be with us. I believe Rob is actually on vacation with his family right now and still is going to be on the program this morning. So that is the Above and Beyond Award already to Rob Bluey. So we're looking forward to our conversation with him. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Welcome to your Tuesday. Thanks for being with me. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Rob Bluey, my friend and correspondent on Tuesdays, is the editor of the Daily Signal. And I believe he's on vacation with his family this week. So, Rob, thanks for being on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Wouldn't miss it.
You're so nice. Now, what are you doing with your family for vacation? I'm curious.
Yeah, we headed a little bit farther south from Washington, D.C. to South Carolina. So we're trying to get to some warmer temperatures, but unfortunately it's been a little bit cool here, but it's supposed to be better today, so we'll hope so.
Yeah, do you have family in that neighborhood?
We don't. We've always enjoyed the Savannah, Hilton Head area, though. So yeah, that's where we decided to go. And you know, the kids, they don't mind the cold. They were in the pool yesterday, so
awesome. Yeah. Well, last weekend was the March for Our Lives, and I did not pay much attention to that because I was on my own March for Additional Sleep, and March for Getting My Taxes Done. But I find it interesting that the March for Our Lives sounds awfully familiar. It sounds like March for Life, doesn't it?
Does. And you know, I know some people who work at that organization very well. Of course, the March for Life happens every January. It has for over 40 years now. And it's one of those things where they said that they were getting a lot of inquiries to their organization, some confusion about the two groups. And I will tell you, it was a massive turnout this weekend in Washington, D.C. The Daily Signal had its team out there. A lot of young people from all across the country made the trek to Washington.
All right. What are some of the takeaways from that event?
Well, it was very well organized, first of all. This was presented in many media accounts as an organic movement that where, you know, people just picked up and made the trip. But if you looked at the websites that were organizing the groups, if you looked at the signs, if you looked at the people who are on the ground registering voters, it was clear that this was a little bit more organized than perhaps just some organic movement that was popping up. So I'd say that was one of the big takeaways. Obviously, the other thing is the messages that you saw both on the signs and in talking to people, it was very much an anti-gun rally. School safety, as we all know, was a much bigger issue than guns. And in this case, the focus was primarily on guns, and many of the solutions that they were proposing, even people who are serious about gun control would say these are not going to improve schools, which tend to be the safest place, even with the tragedy like Parkland, for your kids to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rob, it sounds like there was a fairly large machine behind this organization and this march. I mean, I remember there was times in high school where my organizational ability was, my mom can drive if yours can pick up. So how did they pull this off? This must have been very well-funded, well-organized.
Well, you've had groups that have held marches and rallies before, like the Women's March, which happened on the same day as President Trump's inauguration, as well as Planned Parenthood, give some of their organizational backing to this. You had Everytown, which is the anti-gun group, backed by Michael Bloomberg, who's obviously a billionaire and has a lot of money to put into these causes. So when these groups get together and pool their resources and then have donations of $500,000 from people like Oprah Winfrey and George Clooney,
mm-hmm.
Steven Spielberg, you have a situation where there's no lack of resources to not only put people up in hotels to help feed them. I mean, a lot of the businesses in Washington were going out of their way to support the students. So let's face it. I mean, it's great that young people have taken this opportunity to speak out and have a role in our country and our democracy and engaging on that First Amendment right of theirs. I think that the concern is in the media's coverage, if you're not acknowledging some of the realities here that go beyond what the march actually is trying to do, which is to ban guns, I mean, you're really not having an honest conversation with people. And in some cases, the signs and the rhetoric that they were espousing on Saturday were disappointing. They were themselves quite hateful.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at some of the signs that got held up at this rally, and one was 21st century weapons, 18th century laws. And of course, that would say that the Second Amendment is irrelevant because the founders wrote it in the 18th century and they didn't have these assault rifles back then.
Well, and as my colleague Jarrett Stettman pointed out, who has an excellent piece, he was there at the march. You can find it at dailysignal.com. He said, well, if the Second Amendment is irrelevant, it has to make you question whether or not they think the First Amendment is irrelevant. And, of course, here they are taking part in a massive demonstration, which the First Amendment guarantees them the right to do so.
So, Rob, I assume this March for Our Lives crowd, I assume that was an entirely a gun-free zone.
I wish. You should have seen the tanks. The military was out there to protect. Obviously, a huge police presence. So, lots of guns were there to protect the crowd. And I think that's something that my colleague Genevieve Wood, who did a live report from the march, was interviewing people, was asking them about. And in some cases, you know, you do have that contradiction there, where you know, the number of shootings that take place in gun-free zones are significant. So I mean, it's just proven the one thing that a gun-free zone proves is that you're more likely to have a shooting because somebody knows that they're not going to be able to have somebody you know, take them out, or they won't be able to defend themselves because a shooter will have the only one with the gun. So, yeah, it's a situation, Bill, where when you look at the facts, and we've studied this very closely over the course of the past month, some of the facts are quite surprising. And when you confronted some of the participants in the march about them, they either didn't want to hear it or they just simply didn't know about them.
Yeah. Rob, what about schools? Are they going to start giving pro-life walkouts the same equal time or is this just going to be just for guns?
Well, we're going to find that out because there's actually a school in California, and I'm sure it's not the only one, that where some students are organizing a pro-life walkout. And there's been a teacher who's made that suggestion and has been reprimanded for doing so. You've had a situation across the country where it seems that schools have been willing to go above and beyond to let these students have the demonstrations, excuse absences from schools, let them do the walkout. There's going to be another walkout later in April. I hope that whether it's pro-life or whether it's any other issue, that if students are allowed to demonstrate on one issue, they're given the freedom to do so on another, and they don't let politics and ideology get in the way of that.
Rob, are the students in these demonstrations, are they making guns the problem, or are they saying, boy, I knew that kid, and that kid was troubled? What are they blaming? Are they blaming it on the guns or their peers?
Well, a lot of the people that we talk to, Bill, are blaming it on the guns, and they're blaming it on the NRA. There was a lot of anger at the NRA, believing that the NRA had control over politicians, and that was why politicians weren't enacting more gun control laws. So the combination of, as you raised earlier, people saying, "Well, why do we need an AR-15?" and you know, it's in the most extreme cases, the Second Amendment is outdated, and then you had other people who were saying simply, look, the politicians in Washington aren't going to change unless we vote them out of office. So ultimately, I think that for many of them, that's what they want to do. There was a huge voter registration initiative on display Saturday at the march, and the goal of that obviously is to register these people, hope they vote for Democrats, and those Democrats would replace the Republicans and maybe enact gun control laws. Now, the fact of the matter is, we went back and looked at the data. The highest period of school shootings in this country actually took place in the 1990s, when we had the assault weapons ban in place, signed by President Clinton and enacted by a Democratic Congress. So, again, if you go back and look at the facts and try to explain them to people, they don't seem to really care. They just simply have an agenda that they're trying to pursue, and they're not going to let the truth get in the way of that.
Rob, I think that's the most significant thing that will be said today on the program, because I think that is absolutely true. They don't care what the truth is. They just have their agenda.
Well, it's kind of sad, because you would think that people of that age would be open-minded and willing to learn. And then when and I will say we encountered at least one person. I know there were many counter protesters there who were trying to engage and have a conversation with these individuals. And so it was heartening to see that there were other young people out there, Bill, who went to the march with that purpose in mind, because they wanted to make sure that they weren't single-minded in their view of the world.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a break. I'm speaking to Rob Bluey from the Daily Signal. It's 17 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back with more of Rob Bluey in just a minute. After the hour, we are back talking to Rob Bluey, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. That is at dailysignal.com, dailysignal.com. Definitely go check it out. Rob is on vacation with his family, yet still calls in to be on the show, which makes him one of my heroes. All right, one of your colleagues, Fred Lucas, wrote a great piece in the Daily Signal on what John Bolton will be bringing to the job. Maybe you can have some input on that as well, Rob.
Certainly. Well, a surprise move last week. We didn't expect this to happen quite so quickly when President Trump decided to part ways with H.R. McMaster, his national security advisor, and bring in John Bolton. Bolton will be starting next month, and he has quite a bit of responsibility on his hands in that role. Of course, John Bolton's familiar to probably many of your listeners because he was the U.N. ambassador under President George W. Bush. He's been a fixture on Fox News and a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. So we've known John Bolton quite well for a long time, and he brings quite a resume to the job. And I'll tell you, he's going to give President Trump some straightforward advice on how to deal with China and Iran and North Korea. And particularly as we go into those talks with Kim Jong-un in North Korea, you better believe that Bolton's going to have a big seat at the table.
Yeah. And then didn't President Trump also do some fairly significant house cleaning of Russian diplomats and intelligence officers? From the U.S.?
He certainly Yeah, it's hard to say if Bolton's had an impact on that because, again, he doesn't start until early April. But what we saw this week is both the United States and then also a number of other countries have expelled Russian diplomats in the wake of this this death that it took place in the United Kingdom, which they attribute to Russian poisoning. Russia seems to be getting more bold and aggressive. Of course, Russia denies and says that this is a campaign on the part of the United States to damage its country. But we've had a reporter, a foreign correspondent in Ukraine, Nolan Peterson, based there since 2015, Bill. And I'll tell you, Nolan has another story up on the Daily Signal today about the steps that Ukraine and NATO and others have taken in Eastern Europe simply because of Russia's aggression. So I think that the fact that you've had the United States, the UK, Germany, Ukraine, many other countries expelling these Russian diplomats is a sign that they're just not going to put up with Russia's bullying anymore.
Mm-hmm. So, Rob, talk about who had this job to start with. Was it Michael Flynn? Did he start in this position?
It was, yes. Yeah. So you've had a lot of changes, obviously, in the Trump White House. Rex Tillerson also departed, and Mike Pompeo is coming in as the new Secretary of State. Michael Flynn was the first National Security Advisor. He did not last long, and H.R. McMaster took over. Now, H.R. McMaster did a fabulous job. He brought stability to the position. He helped outline the Trump administration's approach to a lot of the global conflicts. So really established a firm foundation, and I think that's why President Trump was so praiseworthy and thankful, unlike he is in the case when other aides depart. But in the case of Bolton, I think the one thing that you're going to have to remember is this is a man who has been very out there in public with his views. So you know what you're going to get with John Bolton. That's unlike some others in government who don't necessarily have that deep paper trail. Bolton also doesn't need Senate confirmation, so he's a free to start in early April, unlike Mike Pompeo, who will have to go through a confirmation process in the Senate before he becomes the Secretary of State.
Got it. Okay, every time I have to upgrade iTunes, you have to scroll down like 29 pages of before you can click agree, which is a little bit the way they did the budget, the stimulus bill. There was so much to read. Did anyone really read it? And what's in it?
There was no time to read it.
Exactly.
So this is another classic case of Congress, failing in its basic responsibility here. The government funding, as we talked about many times on your program, ran out at the end of September. At that point, Congress should have passed its 12 appropriation bills and sent legislation to the president's desk. What they did was they got into this habit of repeatedly passing short-term spending bills. So they would just kick the can down the road a little bit, go home on recess, come back, they'd take care of other business, and then pass another short-term bill. Well, what they finally did here is they decided to fund the government through the rest of the fiscal year, but they did so in a way where it was negotiated in a back room. It was released one day. This is over 2,000 pages. It was released one day, and then I think 17 hours later they voted on it. So there was absolutely no way that any of the lawmakers could have reasonably read everything in the bill, which is why you had so many Republicans vote against it. You had 90 Republicans vote against it, 77 Democrats. It wasn't enough to bring down the bill. But I think it's heightened the frustrations in Washington about what's going on with our debt and the spending problem.
Yeah, Rob, when Tillerson had this press conference and he said that D.C. was a very mean-spirited town, I would love to get your take on that as well.
Well, it certainly can be a mean-spirited place, and I think more so with the kind of environment you have now between President Trump and the media and between Republicans and Democrats, there does seem to be very little agreement on a lot of issues. So I did recognize what Tillerson said as something that certainly I've observed, but it's one of those things where you have to, plow through it. And as Tillerson said, look, you have an approach that you can take, and that's to be, kind and caring. And that's certainly been my approach, Bill. And I think it's a good way for a lot of people, hopefully, not just in Washington, D.C., but to approach life and their family and friends.
Yeah. Rob, we just have about a minute left. So would you talk about the rumor about Paul Ryan ready to leave, maybe being replaced by Steve Scalise?
Well, it's something that we continue to hear. Particularly, mm-hmm. it seems that Republicans are in trouble electorally. So if Republicans were to lose the House, there would really not be a spot for Paul Ryan. Whether he decides to leave sooner, look, he's got this massive accomplishment in tax reform done. I really don't see him going anywhere before the election in November. But yes, Steve Scalise is somebody who's been rumored. But it largely depends on whether or not Republicans can retain control of the House of Representatives. Because obviously, if the Democrats take control, Nancy Pelosi would be the next in line for Speaker, unless there's some Democrat who challenges her. So it's one of those things that will be closely watching, because Paul Ryan obviously has done a lot of good in his job, and there's a lot of compassion obviously for Steve Scalise because of what he's done as well.
What do you think about Nancy Pelosi's just her well-being? Do you think she's getting a little bit off her rocker?
Well, that's a tough question for me to answer without being mean-spirited.
No. I don't want to be mean-spirited at all myself, but I'm saying I've seen video of her recently, and you compare it to video of 5 years ago, and she seems to really be confused at times and have difficulty articulating things. And I'm just saying, I mean, I'm just curious. Is she? I just wonder if she's well.
Well, they seem to say she is.
Okay,
so,
good.
I mean, I saw her speak at a dinner recently, and she was very sharp. And
oh, good.
So seeing her face to face, I agree with you. Sometimes when she's at a news conference, it does seem like, wow, that was a bizarre answer to the question. But let me just say this, Bill. There are people who in the Democratic Party would prefer not to see her as the next speaker, because they know that that's going to turn out a lot of votes against the Democrats, just because there are so many people who don't like Pelosi and the policies. So there's another up-and-comer named Joe Crowley from New York, Steny Hoyer from Maryland, or others who would be jockeying for that position and might challenge Pelosi. And we'll see. Maybe this is one of the things that gets raised.
Well, Rob, thank you so much for doing the show on your vacation with your family, and happy Easter. And I look forward to our conversation next week.
Thanks, Bill. Happy Easter to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. 28 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 31 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little break for news. And then Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association is going to join us. Talk a little bit about childhood depression. Is it because we're not getting out and playing more? And are some playgrounds too safe? We're going to talk to her in about 8 minutes. Minutes until the top of the hour. Sometimes God's answer to a prayer is, no, or not yet. And, of course, that frustrates some people. For me, I just sort of dig in deeper, pray harder. But anyway, if you are in that situation, John Eldridge, he's the author and president of Ransom Heart. He offers this encouragement to persevere.
We're urged to mature in our prayer life. Can we be okay with some of the answers being no? Or just mystery, we just don't get it. Like, because you've suffered disappointment, and so have I, by the way, so have I. Because you've suffered disappointment, will you give up entirely? And I want the answer to be no. Like, there's still breakthrough. That yes, some prayers go unanswered, but if you don't pray at all, they're all going to go unanswered.
If you want to hear more of that interview from John Eldridge, go to myfaithradio.com. Type in John Eldridge or Moving Mountains. Take a very short break, and then we'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association.
When it comes to what the Bible teaches, you have two choices. Embrace what it says or rationalize it away. This is Jim Garlow. It's what we do, isn't it? We embrace what the Bible teaches or we rationalize, ignore it, hoping it'll go away. Stand up and fight for what you believe. Admittedly, you have to pick your battles. Some things just aren't worth defending. But your faith, your family, your freedoms, they're worth defending. When what God has ordained and established is diminished, when you're being forced to compromise, stand up. Government-funded abortions, injustice, misinformation, lies, destruction of marriage and family, stand up. And here's the kicker. When I speak up of truth and justice, it's not just based on your definition or mine. It's a definition that is based on God and His timeless and eternal Word. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
And that theme song, of course, belongs to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. She's on our studio line as we speak. Good morning, Dr. Rose.
Good morning. Hope you're doing well.
I am doing well. I'm excited for Easter and all that is happening this week. And I'm interested, too, because spring is coming and summer's coming and kids. What is the message to kids? Don't have fun. It's too dangerous.
Well, that is not a good one, and I think you're referring to the study that it says that the more that kids are held back from exploring and just being kids and playing, the more that they're depressed. And if I started thinking about that, and you know, fun and play to a kid, if you see him and you think he's too rambunctious and he's what you consider to be misbehaving and going a little nuts. That's his time of exploration. That's his time to really be a kid and to discover things. And they're discovering and they're getting so happy because they figured something out. Well, to them, they don't really have the signs of depression that we have. What they have is they're suppressed as kids. Kids need a certain kind of environment to grow and to learn. And when we're not giving them that, they are suppressed in their childhood. And that manifests to us as depression. But we're not giving them the ability to become a child, to act, really act like a child and really put those brain cells together and learn things when we're not letting them learn in a natural way. And also all these electronic games virtual games that we have them do are not fully occupying their brains and their hearts the way that outside play and just, you know, being on the monkey bar and maybe falling off of it a couple of times and figuring things out and having, you know, good old-fashioned fights with each other and figuring it out and doing a double dog dare. We're not doing any of those things. So the kids are sort of half forming. And when that happens, it's not like they don't feel it. And that's why we have so many kids that are unhappy in their childhood.
Well, I know that kids are under close supervision at all times, and that's an okay thing. But when you get to be a little bit older, it's okay to, I mean, I remember just as a kid going out and then you'd come back at lunch and then you'd come back at dinner and you'd go create your own fun and you'd go to the playground and you would, make games with other kids and you'd set up teams and you would self-regulate. And it was really a great time. And I just think that some of these playgrounds, for example, there's no more risk in them. There's no chance of ever getting hurt. I don't know if that's good either.
I don't think that that's good at all. We don't want something bad to happen to our child, but we went the complete other way. We decided that we would take no risk. And I think with no risk, there is no gain. And that's the problem with our children today, that they are a no risk, no gain generation. And we've not done them any favors. Now, our childhoods were very different. Even in New York City, I comment about that a lot. You know, I was allowed in the summers, even as young as 10, I was given a key and I was allowed to make sure that I went to the responsibilities and the piano lessons and the Girl Scout classes that I had, go to the library on a certain day. And I was expected to be home at a certain hour and make sure that I was getting the house ready for my parents when they got home and to start dinner. Well, kids don't, and I was 10, and that's not unusual. I've heard of kids that got chickens and got them completely ready from live to being ready to cook, and they were 7 or 8. It's not our children's brains that are different. It's the experiences that we're feeding our children that are different and that are suppressing them and their childhood.
Well, and part of it is that we don't have the electronic options that when we grew up, Dr. Rose, that kids have today. And let's face it, that is very stimulating to the brain. And given an opportunity for kids to sit with a screen in front of their face or to go out and play, there's a good chance they're going to want to sit with the screen in front of their face.
They would, but then that's the parents' prerogative to make sure that we offer to take that away because of their own good. We want their great outcome. So sometimes we have to face that our children might not like us so much so that they grow up and that they're healthy. And I ask parents to think about that and perhaps consider that all the time at the clinic. We don't have to be liked by our kids.
Right. It's as a parent, I suppose it's not your job to have your child like you. It's your job to be their parent, right?
That's right. And to be their parent sometimes isn't a lot of fun. But, you know, when that gut feeling comes to you, my kid's spending too much time doing this, I need to register him to play a sport or give him those kinds of experiences that they need to really grow, that you should go with that. Pray about it, and we should be able to go with that. Because the kids are not multifaceted anymore. They're sort of uni or bi-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Rose, are these children growing up to be a little on the snowflake side? And I say that in a nice way.
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't like that term myself because, I mean, a snowflake is a beautiful thing. But when you think about how the term is being used, it's not one of my favoritest, but it does really sort of describe our kids today because anything makes them fall apart. I grew up a teenager that was sort of rough and tumble, but I could see kids that were very fragile and at the smallest thing and a little bit of teasing that they would fall apart and everybody would have to come and pick them up. Yes, it is our kind of sort of false. And you know what it is? It's almost like we're generating a world for them that's not a real world so that they're happy. And when they have to little by little go out into the real world, then they fall apart because they can't survive outside of our little artificial world. And this is, once again, it's not good. Parents, step back, look at what we're doing so that we stop making these artificial worlds for our kids. We have to have them grow up in a real world. And yes, once again, there are risks to putting them out in the real world. Think about it, pray about it, and make the right decisions for your kids so that they grow up to be sturdy individuals.
Well, if we want them to succeed in the real world, why are we still doing things like having their baseball team go 0-13 and they still get a trophy?
Exactly. And if you see that that's going on, it's time to leave that baseball team or, you know, time to have a real word with the coach. I can think of many times that we sat down with the coach and the people who ran Hannah's school to let them know these aren't right things. And I'm not talking about my daughter. I'm talking about the whole school and what we're trying to build. And we should be having those conversations. And sometimes, you know, those conversations aren't fun. People look at us like the mean guy. But we really should be making sure that in our communities we are raising stronger, more children that are more resilient.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rose, I want to take a little break. When I come back, I want to ask you this question. Should we let kids pick their own diets? Should we let them decide what they're going to eat and how they're going to go about their own diet? And that's kids. Let's take a break. When we come back, more with Dr. Rosemary Stein, 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for listening. Minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Rose, let's talk about kids and their eating habits. When a parent comes in with their child and they're having issues with food and you prescribe a diet, are they more likely or less likely to want to follow that?
Well, and see, I don't usually prescribe a diet. I tell mom that the best diet that she knows is the one that she is knowing inside of her. And so there was a study back in, I think it was the 1930s, and it was done in Montreal. And Ben Spock often pointed to this study, and the, a little pediatrician by the name of Clara Davis chose about 30 different kinds of foods and let these toddlers, they were all orphans or widows, widows' children who had no money, and she let the kids sort of choose what food they would eat. But understand that the 30 food types that the kids were given to eat were all healthy. And so at the end, it was clear that the kids had grown and had done very well, even though they were malnourished to start with because of their circumstances. Well, from that, Ben Spock and many others in their time who were trying to do a sort of a more open way of raising kids, they decided that what that meant was that we can let kids choose their foods and it's okay because they'll do well no matter what. Well, hence now we have the Chicken Nugget and French Fry Society. Try to offer a child something that's healthy when they're used to chicken nuggets and French fries, and you're going to get a full-out temper tantrum. But that's what happens when we offer our children only what they want and think that they're going to choose the right things. Their little brains are not capable of that. That's like little kid torture. And once again, we would be creating little so-called snowflakes if we let them do that. But not only that, malnourished and stunted, brain stunted and height and weight stunted snowflakes. It's not a good idea. And God has given us a brain and a heart as moms and dads so that we learn to choose for them. And it's a matter of their being able to learn to submit to mom and dad's will in a loving and kind way, folks. That doesn't mean, you know, push the food down their throat. Like many have told me, well, I'll just push it down there. That's not the way. You sort of have to be a little smarter than our kids. And we have to figure out how to do this in a way that they understand, they accept our authority because we are their parents and we love them.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rosa, I think I just heard a story maybe earlier this morning that Facebook, through their Android phones, were collecting text messages and phone records kind of thing. And I think, all right, that's starting to feel a little creepy. But what about when the government wants to have access to all of your medical records? That even feels creepier.
I know, and that's actually what I believe is going on. And I think that was one of the guises behind electronic medical records. But what's really scary to me is not just the theory that, you know, somebody's going to have all the records and going to have access to them and going to know, you know, what you did as a kid and whether you were wild and crazy and you did drugs. That's not what's as scary to me as the fact that, well, the relationship with your doctor has been broken down mm-hmm. because they're constantly trying to check the boxes. And also, now instead of having a doctor, many times what you have is a robot because he's going to be fed what to do. And then in that 10 to 15 minutes, if you're lucky, of time, if something pops up on the screen that's what you're supposed to do, if the patient has a series of symptoms and signs, well, that's what you're going to do. You don't have time to look at something else and maybe think about your patient, not, you know, a case. You're just going to choose what pops up on the screen because it second guesses you. It makes you think that that's the right thing. And I don't think that's going to be the right thing all the time. And I'm not talking about, you know, a scary kind of world. I'm thinking each body is different. Each person is different. We're all individuals. And if we're clicking away boxes, we're going to miss the elephant that's in front of us. It's like BMIs. I talk about this a lot, but BMIs don't make a lot of sense. Why don't we just look up and look at the patient and see, do we think our patient is obese? And then what do we do about it? But by putting him on the scale and for the scale to tell us whether our patient is overweight or not is not making a lot of sense.
Yeah. So it's more artificial intelligence versus human intelligence. Is that a little bit of the battle that's going
is
on?
Yeah, I think that sums it up. It's artificial intelligence. And so when you have all this artificial intelligence, then our doctors are not thinking for themselves and really solving the problems. And they're not engaged in the care of the patient. We are not engaged. I'll put myself in there. We are not engaged in the care of the patient the way that we ought to be. We're no longer Hippocratic doctors.
Yeah. Boy, the last time I took my mom to the doctor, she was really not feeling good. And I remember, and I probably have mentioned this to you before, her doctor spent about the first 6 or 7 minutes just holding her hand. It was unbelievably sweet. Oh, my gosh. It was unbelievably sweet. All right. We've got
that
just
is
couple,
medicine.
That's medicine. Yes. Now, we got a couple of minutes left. So how about us saving a child one at a time?
Oh, I have such a great story. I have a young lady, and she's 7 going on 8, and she's in second grade. And she came in, I think it was in January, for the first time because she was failing out of second grade. This had started more or less recently, and her mom brought her in because she was concerned about her. And this little girl is just such a darling to see, but you could tell she was all over the room. She wasn't paying attention. And she made a few comments that made me really stop and think about what was going on. And mom had just had a new relationship that had just started a few months ago that was rather serious. And so it occurred to me that this young lady was getting in her, you know, what for her needs, she was getting a bit neglected. And she wasn't having her real emotional needs being met. And I said, Mom, let's give this a try. Instead of giving her more scoldings and more consequences, more punishments, let's try just giving her the message, the true heartfelt message that you love her. Spend some more time with her. Do some more things one-on-one. And let's see what happens if you do that. Let's do a special little formula. And little Hayden came back in 2 weeks later and almost miraculously, this girl was smiling. She was able to sit still. She was looking at me. The first thing she did when she looked at me coming in, she gave me a huge smile. She came running over to me. She gave me a huge hug. And she said, I'm doing better in school now. And it was so lovely to see those little eyes. She's on my Facebook page if anybody wants to see her. We're holding each other. But kids, sometimes the medicine is kindness and patience, love and time. And when we give them those things, instead of thinking that we have a pill and a solution or checking the boxes like we do so many times as doctors, when we give them the real medicine that they need, your love and your time, the kids will blossom again.
Dr. Rose, that's a beautiful story. Thank you so much and happy Easter. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you. Happy Easter.
You bet. Couple minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.